I want to take a moment to tell you about our friends at Washington Federal. Washington Federal is a local bank and portfolio lender with more than 200 branches across 8 states, more than 32,000 fee-free ATMs, drive-up ATMs, 24/7 online and mobile banking. And Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of SB Live Sports and SB Live Washington. The folks at Washington Federal care deeply about high school sports and the communities that support them across the state of Washington and beyond. Head to wafdbank.com to learn how Washington Federal can help you meet your financial goals. That's wafdbank.com. Washington Federal, a neighbor you can count on. Welcome to the SB Live Washington Podcast, your weekly conversation about high school sports and the people who play them across the Evergreen State. I'm Andy Bueller, high school sports reporter with SB Live, and we have a fun episode lined up for you. I'm really excited about Kings coach Rick Skeen, who joins Dan Dickow and I in a moment to talk about a lot of things. Navigating a pandemic as an administrator, coach, and AD. He told stories about Corey Kispert, the Gonzaga guard, one of the country's top college basketball players this season, who came through Kings in the 1A ranks in Washington, if you remember. He talked about his aggressive scheduling philosophy and the new 1A Emerald City League, and much more, so stick around. Skeen is a great basketball mind and somebody who understands leadership and high school sports really, really well. But before we get to Skeen, we have some fun stories on the site, scorebooklive.com/Washington. That's your home for high school sports news, features, highlights, and information across the state. Last week on this podcast, I talked to Khalil Singleton, Fort Vancouver standout, who is now at Minnesota Prep Academy playing in the Grind Session Bubble, which is a series of high-level grassroots tournaments around the country. He's still enrolled at Fort Vancouver. The Vancouver School District is in online-only learning, but he hasn't been home in a while, and he's pretty much living on the road right now, though. He may return in hopes if there's a season that takes place at the high school level in Washington. But he gave insight into his experience hopping from team to team, playing in these out-of-state tournaments, and the leap of faith it took to leave in hopes to boost his recruitment at a time when he's not being provided opportunities to showcase his abilities. He's having to make those for himself. Obviously, we're in month 9 of a high school sports shutdown in Washington. Washington's one of somewhere around 12 or so states that are not playing, starting their high school basketball season. So if you want to hear Khalil's story, be sure to listen to him, his interview, my interview with him on last week's episode. But I also wrote a story about him. It's on the site right now. It zeroed in on his relationship with Fort Vancouver coach James Ensley. Coach Ensley is somebody who plays an important role in the lives of a lot of his basketball players, not just as a coach, but as a mentor, as a role model, somebody who will help kids get to college, help them with their grades, and sometimes he's even a father figure, and he's really close with Khalil. He's also somebody who truly believes in the institution of high school athletics, playing sports in an education-based setting, and the structure that provides, and the life lessons learned through it that you might not get elsewhere. And so here's a coach who's looking at his star player, somebody who could single-handedly change the culture of the program at Fort. Khalil broke a decades-long record last year, scoring 55 points in a game. But Ensley's sitting here and coming to terms with the fact that, Khalil's best option right now for his future might not be at Fort Vancouver. Ensley can't even open his own gym for him. So, Khalil's trying to make these opportunities happen for himself, and Ensley is his support system, essentially coming to terms with the fact that his best option is not at home. It's in Minnesota. It's on the Grind Session, playing against that high-level competition. So a very fascinating story. He's Ensley's going through, I think, a feeling that a lot of high school coaches across the state are going through right now, and that's a sense of hopelessness, particularly among those coaches who aren't allowed to see their players and are trying to, you know, essentially shore up the side of coaching that is not the X's and O's, that's not the game management, but that is the relationship building, the you know, growing of young men, young boys into men, and that's really tough right now in a global pandemic. So again, that story on Khalil, on Coach Ensley, scorebooklive.com/Washington is where you're going to find it. And Todd Millis and I are really excited about the all-classification preseason top 50 basketball rankings that were recently published. They take an early look at the statewide landscape. They're deeply sourced, researched, and compiled with a lot of care. So head to the site right now and find those. I can link them in the show notes too. Todd and I both went on the radio in Everett, Washington over the past week or so on KRKO's weekly high school sports show with Tom Lafferty and Steve Willits. Both of those guys do great work covering their communities up there in Snohomish County. And Dan Dickow keeps slowly releasing his top 25 statewide recruiting rankings. They're being released in descending order as of now, as I'm recording this. He just released number 14. That's Trey Blossingame of Auburn. And Dan, of course, was a state player of the year at Prairie, college All-American at Gonzaga, played 6 years in the NBA. And he's SB Live's preeminent basketball mind, and he's matched his understanding of the game with strong sourcing among college coaches. So it's not just Dan's opinion that goes into these, although, you know, if it was, they'd still be in pretty good shape. But it's you know, also high-level college coaches who he speaks with off record. So the SB Live Sports recruiting rankings compiled by Dan Dickow, you can find them on the site. And Dan joins me here in a minute. So we at SB Live make postseason awards teams after each season's all said and done, all state teams, all tournament teams, state players of the year, state coach of the year. We did it this fall in the states that are playing football right now. And in Washington, the last time we put out an all-state team was shortly after the state basketball tournaments. And a lot of those decisions on who to include take a ton of time. I remember spending hours on the phone with Dan, Todd Millis, and coaches around the state as we really labored over each pick. One pick, however, was really easy. That was all-classification coach of the year. It took us about 2 seconds to choose Rick Skeen from Kings. The guy who took on Goliath in his non-league schedule was punished, I would say, by an imperfect playoff formatting system with a 14 seed and proceeded to make a run that ended with Kings in the Yakima Sun Dome holding up the 1A state championship trophy. So now we're joined by that very coach, Rick Skeen. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for taking the time. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks, you guys. Appreciate all you do for high school sports and a lot of respect for what you do, even if I might question your coach of the year pick last year.
Hey, Andy, I'll jump in there real quick. And I had a chance to kind of watch Kings from a distance at a summer tournament a year. It would have been not this summer with COVID, but the previous summer. And I was impressed with what I saw. We had a chance to sit down and talk. And then I saw them in person last, I believe it was February, Coach, and I was big time impressed. But the thing I think from a distance I was the most impressed with, the fact is Andy's exactly right. The schedule that you are willing to play as a smaller school against bigger schools in the state, knowing that that will prepare you guys for exactly what you faced with the state tournament. I commend you for that. I wish more teams and more coaches at all levels would do that.
Yeah, thank you. It's our philosophy. Everybody's got a different philosophy. We tell our kids right from the start that the RPI, you know, if we're the best team in the state, we'll beat the teams that are in front of us. And we set a schedule that's what we tell kids. We're going to lose tough, close, hard-fought games in December and January to bigger schools that will then prepare us. And I reminded our kids, I mean, we won two overtime games in the semis and the finals. And I think those wins were aided by great battles against Glacier Peak and against Mount Si and against some out-of-state competition and stuff. So, you know, you pick your poison. You can go 20-0 and not be prepared for the postseason, or, you know, you can take a few losses and hopefully better prepare you. And that's the philosophy we choose to do. And I think it's fun for our kids to be able to play against that top-level competition.
It was a great state title game now 9 months ago, and I wasn't there to cover it. Todd Millis, reporter with SB Live, who typically is on this podcast week in and week out, could not stop raving about what a great game it was against Linden Christian. But since those 9 months, this pandemic has happened, and you approach your position. You have several different positions that kind of approach things from different angles as a coach, athletic director, and of course, an administrator at Kings, a school where you guys have had, you know, students in some form or facet since the start of the school year. What has this school year looked like for you while sports are shut down?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things is that we're meeting nonstop as athletic directors. Like everything right now, it's like plan A, B, and C. And then the next day, two of those three plans are off the table. So we got to create a new plan B and C. And so from an athletic director standpoint, I'm spending a lot of time on Zoom calls. I actually sit as an honorary member on the executive board. So obviously the WIAA executive board, we've been very busy. The cool part is I get to see kids 4 out of 5 days, and that's why we do what we do. And, you know, no more important time to be able to connect with kids and look them in the eye and make sure that they're doing okay. You know, one of the things is disheartening as this is for everyone. This is the time that I remind kids, these are the lessons we've been learning through athletics. We talk about commitment, we talk about discipline, we talk about toughness, we talk about dealing with disappointment, we talk about, you know, not pouting and quitting and feeling sorry for ourselves. And those are the lessons that get you ready for life and get you ready for a pandemic that nobody really knows how to deal with. You know, for my basketball guys, I say all the time, we it's the same deal. We control what we can control. We keep getting better. We keep getting in the gym. We keep getting in the weight room, and we wait for them to let us onto the court. But the other stuff, we can't waste time and energy and brain power with, because we don't control it. So I'm not happy for it, but I do think it's a great chance. You know, oftentimes we talk about life lessons, and the kids don't get those for 10 years down the road. They're dealing with a life lesson while they're still in my program. And so I'm proud of them. They're grinding and they're working and they're getting ready for games, whether those happen in February or March or May or whenever those happen.
Hey, Coach, I'm a person that I like to think I have a really faith-filled background. With you being in a position at a private school where you're able to share your faith and teach your faith and encourage your faith, how has that helped you in this time as a coach, a teacher, and an administrator?
Well, you know, Dan, you know this, the faith is something we work out and we continue to work out, and we're still working out. I often, you know, one of our Bible teachers talks about the longest 18 inches in the world is from your head to your heart. And having grown up in the church, my dad was a pastor, my brother's still is a pastor. You know, I know all the right answers, and I have all the scriptures, but even, you know, personally, there's times it's hard to cling to those. You feel discouraged, you feel disappointed, but the truth is we know that it's, you know, it's all part of a bigger plan, and we just got to do our part. And I just think there's no more important time to reach out and to care for each other and to love on each other and to support each other, because our world is hurting, and for a myriad of reasons. But the kindness and the empathy and the care that we try to teach within our program, you know, that's something that we continue to say. This is a time for reaching out. This is a time for checking on each other. This is a time for lifting up your brother. And again, I really am proud of how our kids have responded to that.
As a coach, what kind of contact have you had with your players, and how have you maintained that everything that you're saying, extending that compassion and just your leadership throughout a time when, you know, you might not be able to see them in person?
Yeah. You know, we spent some time together this summer, and we, you know, I coached in a few tournaments that we got to play in this summer, and you know, they've just kept going. And honestly, I haven't done a lot with them in person, but they've continued to play. They're continuing to, you know, go wherever they can find places to play, and kind of doing that on their own. But, you know, through text, through, you know, we have our group chats and love to send, you know, motivational stuff that I steal from other people, things to think about. You know, you guys know Coach DeBoer well, and he's really kind of joined our team. And, you know, he's a lot better social media guy than I am. He's, you know, he's a little more Twitter versed and other things. So he's also been big in terms of just encouraging our kids and challenging our kids and helping our kids to remember the importance and what we're all really here for. Basketball will end at some point, but these memories and then these lessons, you know, again, that's a philosophy a lot of us have, but I often say I feel like my work is best judged 10 years down the road, and the kind of young men that we've helped mold, and the kind of husbands and fathers and church members and community members, and so I you know, it's not been perfect, but we're still plugging along. And again, what I'm most proud of is our kids just got their nose to the grindstone and they're working. And whether that's a gym set up in their garage, whether that's, you know, going out in the rain to the local park, we got kids that work. I've never seen a group like it. And that culture really started with Corey Kispert, but it's just carried on. I mean, that's just that's what Kings basketball has become, is you work 365 days a year. And when coach says stay out of the gym, you sneak in and hope he doesn't find out. And, you know, that's kind of the way it works. So again, these kids work for what they have. And that's what I'm proud of, you know, is the work ethic. And that's one of our core covenants. You know, it's something you can control. We talk about what can you control. You can control how hard you work. We can't control when we get to put our uniforms on, but we can control how hard we work today. And our kids are. I mean, I'm super proud to be associated with them.
Coach, you mentioned Corey Kispert, and you kind of perfectly led Andy and I into one of the players from your program that we wanted to talk about. I know you guys won, I believe it was back-to-back titles while he was there. He's gone on to have a really nice career at Gonzaga. Now, you know, 3 games in as a senior at Gonzaga, he's absolutely exploding onto the national scene. Did you expect this from Corey? Was there any characteristics about him in high school that led you to believe that, you know what, he was going to be an unbelievable college player at the college level?
Well, the answer for me is yes. And again, Dan, you know Corey. He's a better person than a player. He's one of the greatest young men that I've ever had a chance to be around. And again, I think those qualities, those character qualities that we espouse so strongly in our program, those are the things that lead to future success. And I said a long time ago that Corey was either going to play in the NBA or be president, and maybe both. And because of who he is, I mean, he is just a, you know, I've talked to Andy about this. For years, even when he was in high school, I likened him to Russell Wilson for the off-court stuff. And to me, that's a high praise, because I think the world of Russell and all the stuff he does off the court and the leader he is and how he carries himself. But that's who Corey is. Corey's that same person. He doesn't change. He's not up and down. He treats people the right way, no matter who they are. And again, I think he will be a game changer for the rest of his life at whatever he chooses to do.
Corey now obviously making a huge impact on the national level, one of the preeminent basketball players across the country in college, but he played, you know, in Kings. He played at a small school in high school. And, you know, he goes down his senior year after, as Dan mentioned, you guys had won two state titles, looking at potentially a three-peat. You guys spoke after Corey learned that he was out for the season with an injury. The news came down. Walk us through it kind of mid-season. You're gunning for a three-peat, and something kind of his approach and what something he said to you really stood out. Do you want to walk us through that time, that conversation, and maybe how that informed the way you think about him as a leader?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was kind of our off-season mantra. We were going for three in a row. And that was a big deal to us, and it motivated our off season. It motivated our weight room workouts. It motivated our gym time. And we were playing well. We'd gone to Arizona and played some really high level teams, made up of guys that are playing Division I basketball today. And we'd had a really strong showing, and, you know, so things were on the up and up, and, Corey hurt his foot. And so he missed some time, and all along we thought it was a 3 to 4 week thing. And, you know, we took that again as a coach, you know, next man up, you know, giving other guys some opportunities. Corey came back early February, played like 10 minutes and heard something pop and, you know, came off the floor. And I think we all knew at that time, but, you know, there's still that hope. He goes to the doctor and it's, you know, it's nothing big. But he went and got the news. He was going to have surgery. His career at Kings was going to be over. And I remember Corey coming back from his doctor's appointment and really coming and almost, you know, grabbing me and looking me in the eye and going, "Coach, the goal doesn't change. You know, the plan doesn't change. We can win a three-peat, and we can do it with the guys we have, but they, you know, they got to believe they got to hear it from you, and you got to believe it, and you got to sell it. And, you know, I'll do whatever I can." I'm not kidding. He did. I mean, he might've worked harder in a boot as an assistant coach for the last month of his Kings career. We have video. I'm sure the doctors weren't thrilled. I'm sure Gonzaga wasn't thrilled. He's sitting on the end of the bench with crutches and a boot. And I swear a couple times watching games in the state tournament, he got about 2 feet off the floor in that boot. And he was all in. It's just such a unique quality. And again, I've shared with you that, you know, for an 18-year-old kid to come to his old coach and say, "Coach, you know, we're okay. We're fine. These guys can do it. They've been supporting me all these years, and they can step up." And it's just not a common thing for an 18-year-old kid. And I still say we finished third that year, and it still may have been one of our greatest runs that I've been a part of, is because really through Corey, he got guys to believe that we were still going to win a state title. And we knocked on the door. We had a chance in the semi and just didn't make enough shots. But special, special young man. And will always have a place in my heart for sure.
You guys have a tremendous younger talent. Well, I guess he's not young now that he's an upperclassman, Tyler Lindhart. He's being recruited by a number of schools on the West Coast. I see him as a terrific college prospect. What are the differences between him and Corey skill-wise, as well as recruitment and where you think those guys' careers kind of paths are heading? Because yeah. I was impressed with Tyler when I saw him last year.
Yeah. Tyler, I mean, I think the one thing that's the biggest difference between Corey and Tyler is their mindset. You know, Corey is, he's a natural glue guy. And I mean, again, something that stood out even in these first three games at Gonzaga, you know, he put 17 up in the first half, and then he doesn't take another shot for the first 14 minutes of the second half. I mean, again, so many kids are thinking, well, I got 17 and a half. I got to get shots up. I got to go for 35 tonight. That's just not who Corey is. Corey's about winning and doing whatever he needs to do. Tyler is one of those natural scorers. I mean, he's a Mamba mentality. A Gonzaga reference would be a Josh Norvell. I mean, Tyler thinks every time he touches the ball, whether there's one, two, three, four, five guys guarding him, that he has the advantage. And so that's probably the biggest difference in their game. Is it's not even a skill difference; it's a mindset difference. Tyler shoots the ball incredibly well. We know how well Corey shoots the ball. Tyler's really worked on putting the ball on the deck and getting to the hole and using his strength. I had one of the Gonzaga assistants said to me before Tyler's sophomore year, he thought Tyler would score double figures in the Big Sky that year. You know, the question becomes, does his guy score 30 or, you know, whatever? But I think people recognize that he's going to put points on the board at the college level. And he's, you know what, I mean, again, people say, oh, 1A or whatever, but he's playing elite level AAU, and he's doing the same thing. He's putting big time points on the board wherever he goes. So I think that's probably the biggest difference. And again, you know, the areas that I'm pushing Tyler to be more like Corey has to do with leadership. It has to do with being well-rounded. It has to do with, you know, the defending and the rebounding. And those are areas that Tyler continues to grow in. And it's one of the things I'm proud of is our kids develop year to year. And, I watch films of Corey as a freshman, and he was way better as a junior and a senior in our program. And Tyler continues to improve on the things that we ask about. So I think somebody's going to be really surprised with what they get in Tyler. He doesn't look the part, but I think he's going to go somewhere and somebody's going to have a really nice surprise, and they're going to get a kid that puts a lot of point. You know, he's going to become one of those 1,500, 2,000 point college kids somewhere. That's what I believe, and hopefully find the right fit for him.
You talk about their improvement from freshman year on, and Tyler came in and contributed immediately. I mean, he was an all-tournament team guy, but freshman year Tyler Linhart, sophomore year Tyler Linhart, very different players. He really took the initiative to change his body. He slimmed down. He packed on muscle, added some a lot to his offensive toolkit. You go back to Corey. Corey was your first Division I player at Kings. Now you have another. You have several guys who are, poised to play in college. Because of the program that you've led and the success it's produced, what is your approach to player development year in and year out? Because I don't think it's an accident that guys like Corey, guys like Tyler in a hotbed like Seattle stayed at Kings, went to Kings in the first place, and saw the way they developed throughout their 4 years there.
Well, I mean, you know, my thing, it's not different than a lot of folks, is number one, I'm going to speak truth to people. I'm not a cheerleader by nature. I'm a pretty serious and stoic sort of a person, but I'm going to tell you. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You got to get better at this. You have to change your body if you think you're going to play at the next level. You've got to get more explosive. One of Corey's things early on had to do with ball handling and passing. I mean, when he was a freshman, we never wanted him to pass because it was such an adventure every time he let go of the ball. We figured we had a way better chance if he just shot it every time, because we never knew where the ball might end up if he passed it, which was hard because he liked to pass. He just wasn't great at it. And so I think that's anytime you want to develop at something, you got to have somebody that'll be real with you and just say, here's the things, and you don't have to like it. And it may not even be that fun, but here's the deal. And then here's the plan. But the biggest part of our, development is how hard the kids work. I mean, I just say, I, I get probably a little defensive sometimes. You know, you get the private school and all these amazing kids. And I'm like, I will put the hours my guys put in the gym against any program in the state. You don't write a check to become great at something. You don't push the, you know, the Staples easy button. The only way to become great is to put the hours in. And our kids do it. And, you know, our kids come home from the state tournament on Sunday afternoon, and there's a group of them in the gym Sunday night or Monday after school. There's, you know, the things that I have to monitor more has to do with, you know, getting those breaks in and being willing to take a week off, because that's what your body needs. And it's, I've had several repetitive, you know, use injuries. I really think Corey's foot was a, you know, he just pounded and pounded and pounded. And so again, I don't apologize for our kids' success, because they're working and they're working really hard. And that's the culture, and that's them. That's not me. That's our kids and the culture that they've established, and a mindset to push each other and to hold each other accountable. And again, I can't take credit for that, but I am really proud of it for sure.
You know, we talked with Roger DeBoer when he was on the podcast a couple weeks ago, down in Arizona, where he's relocated after his departure at Lynden Christian. You guys, as you had mentioned earlier, have grown closer throughout this shutdown. Roger has joined in a way the Kings program. He's been on the sideline with you throughout the summer when you guys have made opportunities to play. For somebody who may be a basketball fan that goes to the state tournament every year or follows high school basketball, that may seem a little contradictory to the fact that you guys have been competing against each other as 1A powers for years. What with Roger, what has that been like these past few months getting closer to him? I have to imagine part of it is just the shared philosophies and what you talk about with, you know, nobody's putting in more hours than you. Got to imagine a lot of that lines up with what he believes too.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the thing. On the outside, Roger and I are very different people. At the core of who we are, both in, you know, in our faith and in how we kind of run programs and the experiences we try to provide, we're very similar. So, I think the part that people don't realize is that, you know, coaching is such a fraternity. And, you know, Roger and I've had some battles, and I mean, some big time battles over the years. And the, you know, I mean, I before I came to Kings, I coached in the same league with him at Burlington Edison. And, but the only people that know what we go through are other people that go through the same stuff. And so, Roger and I have always been close, and we've always picked up the phone throughout the year and given a call. We've always talked about the expectations of our communities. We've talked about the, you know, the drive to win and the drive to do it the right way and things like that. So it's not a new friendship. We've definitely spent more time. It's been fun to, just to talk the game and to talk philosophy. And again, because Roger and I are so different on the outside, I think we really complement each other. I mean, he is a rah-rah guy. He is a motivational sort of a guy. I asked Corey one time, and he wouldn't answer this, I think because he was afraid that Coach Few might find out. But I asked Corey, I said, honestly, between Coach Few and I, who has more personality? And he wouldn't answer. And I think either A, because he was afraid, or B, because it's such a close-knit race right now. And so he might have, you know, he might still be deciding. But at some point, I'm going to pin it down. And, you know, I'm obviously not near the coach that Coach Few is. But if I could win even just a personality win, might do something for my self-esteem. So, Roger definitely adds some fun to our mix and our locker room that maybe Coach Skeen doesn't bring.
Hey, Coach, I got one last question before, you know, we keep moving on with this conversation. But Seattle Metro League's had a tremendous amount of success over the years. There's been a lot of private schools in the Seattle area that have a tremendous amount of respect. Does that impact you positively or negatively when kids might be looking to go from middle school to high school?
You know, again, Dan, you know this. It's there's still this misnomer out there that you got to play at 3A and 4A to go get a Division I scholarship. I just believe differently, and I mean we've spoke to that over the years. I mean I actually was a JV coach when Luke Ridenour was putting, you know, 140 up for the Borderites, Joe Harris, you know, Corey Kispert. If you're the real deal, you know, I always tell parents that the college athletics is a $1 billion industry, and these coaches, their well-being is at stake. They're not going to miss someone because they went to a 1A school. And plus, the majority of the recruiting is now with the Select and AAU. But that's still a fight that we fight. I think Corey helped break it. I think part of Tyler still being here, it has to do with Corey. I hope the next, you know, high-level talent that comes will look and realize that you know, this is a place you can grow and develop and be found. But at the end of the day, I don't worry myself that much about it. I coach the kids that want to be in the program. If I was a better recruiter, I'd probably be at the next level. I just, who wants to be here? And even when families talk about leaving, I simply use the phrase, you know, I want what's best for your son. And I'm gonna trust parents that they're gonna always do what they think is best for their son. And if they think somewhere else is a better place, then I will, you know, we can be friends and hopefully come watch a game. But I just don't get caught up in that. I'll leave it at that. But I'm sure not out looking for kids. We have kids that come knock on our door, but we have plenty of talent in our system to develop. And again, I want kids that want to be here. I don't want to twist somebody's arm to be here.
You talk about some of the small school talent in the state, certainly in the Seattle area, as we look at this season, and you know, the season's supposed to start in February, although that much remains up in the air. But the league you guys are in this year looks a little bit different. Walk me through what exactly has shaken up within your league and what that presents for you guys in a competitor.
Well, we started about a year and a half ago, and a few of us got together. We had, you know, we had two leagues that both were very had wide ranging levels of where programs were. So you have two leagues, and we're talking every different sport, where you've got programs that are top three in the state, and then you've got programs that struggle to win games, and you're having to play each other, and that just isn't a win either side. I mean, you take a basketball game, being up at 40 at halftime, it's not a win for the team behind, but it's really not a win for the team ahead. So we worked hard to put two leagues together with this theory that we would have two divisions, and it would change by sport and it would change by year, but it would take the you know, the more developed programs and put them all in the same league, and the programs that are trying to become competitive, put them in the same league. And to me, that's a win. I mean, I would want, whether, you know, if I changed schools and went to try to build something, I want to know that my kids have a chance to win on Friday night. And we were playing games in all sports where that wasn't the case. No matter how bad the talented team played, they were going to win by a lot. And no matter how well the other team played. So we're really excited. You know, I mean, we haven't actually had our first league game because the league was supposed to start this year, but that's the theory, is that, again, so for example, in our new league, you know, Seattle Academy, who, you know, I'm trying to argue is the most talented 1A team in the state this year. We would play them twice in league. We'd play them in, you know, districts. We'd play them, you know, that's a win. I mean, to be in a league with another program that you're just going to have to fight tooth and nails. And I think that's how people feel. I know the Gonzaga guys love when other programs in the conference are better. You know, I mean, that's, again, doesn't help your team to go just drill people. And so when you've got league opponents that are good, And so now we're excited about the opportunity to go play league games where we have to be at our best or we're going to lose. And that's what you love as a coach.
Coach, we really appreciate you joining us here today. I'm looking forward to the opportunity at some point to watch you guys duke it out in that league with some of those great teams that you mentioned. Thank you so much for joining the podcast. For SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, he's the head coach of Kings High School in Seattle, Rick Skeen. I'm Andy Bueller, and Dan Dickow is with me. We will catch you next week.
Thanks, guys.
This podcast is brought to you by SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. You can find our work at scorebooklive.com/Washington. As always, a big thanks to our sponsor, Washington Federal, and thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. The song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called So Far Away, written by Carl Johnson, James Schroeder, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. Talk to you next week.